Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Warriors HQ podcast. I'm Dieter Kurtenbach, joined by Logan Murdoch. He's in Oakland, I'm in Chicago, and the Warriors are back to their winning ways, and Klay Thompson looks like he might be back. But, you know, here's the thing. We've said that before, Logan, and didn't really work out all that well. So you watched the game last night. I watched the game last night. We saw Klay have a pretty good game. What are your overall thoughts? Is Klay Thompson the man that we were hand-wringing about so much? Is he actually back?
We'll see on Thursday. We'll see on Thursday evening against the Rockets if he can put two straight games together. But I mean, he seemed to play like how he normally plays. He got it. He got the looks that he needed to. He still had some weird moments where he missed a dunk and he missed a layup on consecutive possessions. But for the most part, he was getting, you know, he was getting the shots he wanted off assists. It didn't look like he was forcing a lot of shots that he normally does to try to get back in rhythm. But he did get back into the flow. We'll see if he can keep this going, but it was a good promising start.
It helps, I imagine, that they're playing the same team back-to-back days. It's not a long flight, but playing the Trailblazers twice in the span of 72 hours has got to be fairly helpful. You know what defenses they're going to throw at you. You know how they defend you, not just from encyclopedic knowledge of the NBA, having been in it for 7 years or whatever, but just like, hey, we just saw this. Just do what you didn't do right the day before, and you should be okay. Klay 4 of 5 on 33 minutes, 57% from the floor overall, 32 points against the Blazers in the Warriors' win last night, Saturday night, 115-105. I agree with you on the sentiment that we have to see, because I think we forget. Klay said that it was a little bit of a slump. It was not a little bit of a slump. He has been slumping all season.
No. He said there was no slump. He said he was not slumping. There was nothing of the sort.
I really enjoyed Klay's comments before he had that nice game. I guess he didn't have a nice game after he made these comments, but before he kind of looked like he might have broken out of it, saying, like, who's going to tell me how to shoot unless it's Reggie Miller or somebody, I don't know. And he kept talking. Klay does this a lot. Klay's a smart guy, but like, he does this a lot where he sort of comes to his conclusion mid-sentence, and he goes, you know, who am I going to talk to? Steve? Oh, man, I guess I should talk to Steve. He was a 45% career shooter. And it's like, that is somewhat, I mean, this is something that Klay hasn't had to deal with very much, and Klay's this inscrutable type. But there's validity to the argument. He's arguably the second greatest shooter of all time. The only guy that he can really go to for advice, luckily he's next door to him in his lockers, like, it's Steph Curry, the greatest shooter of all time. But how do you really tell Klay, like, hey, man, your shot looks a little bit broke? Because there's no way I could tell it. I'm sure you feel the same way. Like, he looked fine. It was clearly something between the ears.
Yeah, it seemed like, because I remember we were looking at a game. It wasn't his form. It looked like he was getting good form. It looked like he was getting the shots that he normally gets. He just wasn't making them.
Yeah.
And to your argument about whether he's going to be consistent on this basis, I'm looking at the stats here. All the times that he's gone 50% or more, he's had the next game is shot in 30%.
Right. No, that's his entire season, right? Like, he's had a couple of those. And we remember the Chicago game, 14 threes. The Chicago game was a big deal, not just because he broke the NBA record, but because he was in such a slump before that. We thought that broke him out of the slump, and all he did was go right back into it. So Klay kind of has a bit of revisionist history now that maybe he's on the other side of it. Maybe. Again, I think that your point was 1,000% astute. Like, he's got to put two or three of these games together before we sort of wipe the slate clean.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might have been a little too early to be telling your hand you missed it after your shooting chance you missed it after a 4-3. But, I mean, we'll see what happens with Klay. I think that one thing that they did do, and Draymond Green was really a proponent of this. He was like, I can get Klay going. And he did in a lot of ways, you know, through different actions and getting him in spots where he can't hit the threes that he needed to hit. So, you know, I think if they keep getting him shots within the offense and places where he doesn't have to force it a lot, I think that he can get back into rhythm that way. That's something that they can do going forward and helping Klay get to where he needs to be.
Well, it's really interesting you mentioned Draymond, because I want to segue into that. But first, I do got to say, I mean, this has been the smart NBA defense knows that the Warriors have four great options, but two of those options are hyper elite, all time great, and then the other two are just mere all stars on offense. And when you're playing Kevon Looney, he's not really a thing. Like and we'll get into that a little bit later. But like Kevon Looney, you're not fearing Kevon Looney on the offensive end. You fear Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, and then if you had to choose, of course you're going to fear Klay Thompson. He can go off on anybody, but then you're going to slack off of Draymond. And Draymond called it a gimmick defense, which I always found ironic because that's the same defense that Draymond Green and the Warriors used to beat Tony Allen and the Memphis Grizzlies in the 2015 playoffs. But alas,
yes.
Maybe a playoff defense in the middle of December, Draymond took offense. What did you think about his decisiveness? Because that's really the issue. He's not going to be a good three-point shooter. Even if he misses it, he can still affect the game on offense by penetrating and dribbling and playmaking. What did you think of his decisiveness over the last couple of games since he faced that gimmick defense?
I think his decisiveness was better. I mean, it's been better overall since that loss, but I do think that it was great in the game on this week against the Blazers at home at Oracle Arena. It was him passing the ball, him making shots. He made a big three down the stretch of that game. And I think that was really good for him. But also, I mean, I think he did show some decisiveness on
Saturday night,
where you know he got the 13 rebounds, he did get some steals, he didn't necessarily have to score, and this was a more in line Draymond game. He had 2 points but had 13 rebounds and 5 assists. I mean, that's how he can affect the game when he's not making his shot, and that was also something that he wasn't doing. He wasn't getting the rebounds when his shot wasn't going. He wasn't getting those steals when his shot wasn't going. I think personally, it's fine if his shot isn't, you know, average, as long as he's doing those other things, because if he's passing the ball and helping out the offense, then they can go to another level. And, you know, the shots are just a bonus, because last year he couldn't shoot worth the lick, and he did do well within the offense. So I think if he can be decisive the way he has been over the last two games, they can be really good.
Totally agree with you. It was interesting, you know, a few games ago before that Christmas Day, I don't know if we can call it a massacre. It was a fairly interesting game. But before that blowout loss on Christmas, I had asked Steve, how do you feel about Draymond's shot? Because it wasn't a one-off there. It had looked really rough since he had come back from injury. And Steve said, that's not what Draymond does for us, in sort of a Dieter, you know better tone, which, to be fair, I did, but I needed the quote. And last night, Saturday night, was the best example of that yet. 1 for 6, as you mentioned. 3 points, just that made three-pointer. 9 rebounds. 6 assists, only 2 turnovers, and that's big. His turnover percentage has been massive this season, and it negates a lot of the positives that he can do with playmaking when he's constantly throwing the ball into the benches. A block, you know, 3 fouls, all that, but he's a plus 27, far and away the best Warrior on the night, plus 27. So Draymond's always going to be in there for the defense. That goes without saying. But if he can also play make, and remember early in the season before that injury, the Warriors really wanted to push it in transition. When they went 10-1, it was Draymond pushing the ball in transition, not Steph, not Durant. No, but get the ball to Draymond and let him push it, let him penetrate. I totally agree with you. The shot is gravy, but it's one of these things where he had missed so many shots that I think he was thinking shoot first. Try to get the shot going first. Make the defense respect you first, instead of just making the decisive playmaking thing. And he just got in his own head a little bit. He got out of rhythm. It looks like it's coming back. I don't know if it's all the way there yet. He hesitated a couple of times last night. But no one's going to remember how many points Draymond Green scored in the game. They will remember how much of an impact. It's the Oscar Robertson saying, don't look at the box score to show me a superstar. Watch the game. Draymond Green's a superstar when you watch how he affects a game, both sides of the court. So even though he only scored 3 points and shot 16% last night, I thought he was exceptional, but nowhere near where he could be. Let's go into Draymond a little bit here, because he ties in to the center position, which the last two games, the last three games, and I mean, I want to go back to Christmas with Zubac just absolutely looking like Hakeem Olajuwon out there.
Zoo Alcindor.
Zoo Alcindor. I loved it. Shout out Dragonfly. Draymond, Steve at the beginning of the season said, Draymond Green, we don't want him to play center at all. It's too much wear and tear. His body really took a beating last year. That stuff is cumulative. You're never really going to get 1,000% healthy from there. He's never going to be 23 again. And now he's playing 25 minutes a game at center. Meanwhile, Kevon Looney is slid into the number one center spot. with Damian Jones out. And this isn't to say that Damian Jones was a very good player this year. He was really up and down with far more downs than ups. But he was a body and certainly one that could handle himself in a low post against more or less anybody if he had the right temperament about him that day. Now, Kevon Looney, a guy who last year they really only used as a super switchy defender center, which we saw a lot in the playoffs. He's the starting center on this team with Jordan Bell as his backup. But really, Draymond Green's taking the bulk at center minutes. And Yusuf Nurkic followed up on the Zu Alcindor train there and just absolutely wrecked the Warriors back-to-back nights. You look around some of the better teams. I mean, you look at Oklahoma City, who you could argue right now is probably the Warriors' number one threat in the Western Conference. Steven Adams has got to be licking his chops over here. We all know Boogie's coming back. We just don't know when. Are you of the mindset that the Warriors need to do something about this center rotation ASAP and figure out the Boogie stuff later? Because I think I'm in that camp right now.
I think I'm in that camp too, mostly because, you know, I did a radio hit yesterday, and yeah. The question was, you know, what are we going to do until Boogie gets back? But like, Boogie might not be the savior on defense.
Exactly.
Even a fully healthy Boogie wasn't the best defender.
True.
And but I think that they do need something at least in the interim, because you just need a body right now. I think that we've talked about this before about Kevon Looney. As great as he is, he's still what, 6'9".
Yeah,
and he's not the biggest guy in the world.
He ain't a banger.
So I think
he ain't a banger.
He's not a banger. And I think that you have to, whether it's a Robin Lopez or anyone. And I think we've talked about this also earlier, that if the way they were much maligned, but if you have like a Zaza or mm-hmm. somebody or anyone that is of 7 feet tall, that would be a better option right now.
Because, yeah, it's not as if you're looking for points or anything. You're just looking for a human being who can stand in the way of a center having a career night, a honest to goodness NBA center.
Yeah, exactly. So in that point, I think you do need it. You do need an extra center. And the Warriors were much maligned for having 18 centers last year. But I mean, you know, you kind of needed it. And so we'll see what happens. You know, the Robin Lopez has been floated as a potential guy. But I mean, I think if they have an opportunity to get a center, they should, just for the simple fact that, you know, these Kevon Looney and a Jordan Bell work best when they are coming off the bench in very specific duties.
Right.
As we want you guys to switch.
Absolutely.
We want you guys to be versatile defenders. We don't need you to play. We don't want you to be a guy that's starting and guarding a Nurkic or a Steven Adams. We
right.
need you for specialized roles, and they just aren't that right now.
Well, and that's and who has to take on the bulk of the minutes if Steve Kerr does want to do those specialized roles? It's Draymond, and I can't in good conscience say that Draymond's struggles coming back from injury this year, or perhaps even the injury itself this year, haven't been tied in some way to the workload that he's getting at center. Let's just go down the Western Conference real quick. So the Nuggets are the number one seed. They're a half game up on the Warriors as we speak. I mean, it's not as if they don't have an elite center. Now, not necessarily a true banger, but Lord knows that the Joker can throw a body on somebody and knock him around. Number three in the Western Conference, the Thunder, Steven Adams. We just talked about him. You don't have to worry about the Clippers. I don't think you really have to worry about the Rockets. Montrezl Harrell and Clint Capella, those are guys that Kevon Looney can handle. We certainly saw Kevon Looney be a big factor against the Rockets last year. I mean, he turned that series in some ways. The Lakers with Tyson Chandler and Zubac, I didn't think I would say this, but you kind of have to have a real center. Otherwise, Zubac is going to go off in a playoff series and turn into a cult hero. Nurkic can get run off the court by a lot of teams. The Golden State Warriors might be one of those teams, but you at least need to have the option available to you. Sacramento, I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge would have a field day against Kevon Looney. Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert, there's some interesting thoughts on that one, just because I do like to try to pull him out of the paint if you can. Mm-hmm. But Kevon Looney did not have a great game when they went up against the Jazz recently. We all know that the Grizzlies and my guys, Marc Gasol and Jaren Jackson Jr., are going to go to town on him. Yeah, it's tricky. I don't know if the Pelicans and the Timberwolves are going to get into this thing. Certainly the Mavericks are kind of out of it as well. But there's a lot of really good centers. I mean, we talk about sort of how the NBA gets smaller and smaller. There are some real big men still around, and you don't even want to look in the Eastern Conference and what they got going on.
Yeah.
I think that Miles Turner and Joel Embiid and even Serge Ibaka would have a field day against Kevon Looney, because I think you're spot on with your analysis when it came to how these guys are really situational players. And Jordan Bell isn't even getting that many situations outside of necessity if we just need another dude, because he's really a power forward.
Well, remember, Jordan Bell and Kevon Looney didn't even play much in that San Antonio series.
Absolutely.
Last year, if at all. There was a reason why they didn't play, and you're going to see that like going forward, and you know.
Well, you won't. Gonna, I mean, that's. I mean, I guess you'll see Steve Kerr's worst nightmare and why he was benched. They were all benched. Well, like this is what we said would happen.
Yeah, I think the Warriors need to get back to a point where they are playing guys in situational, because that's when they were playing at their best last year in the playoffs, when
absolutely.
They can go in, oh, it's good. We can put Zaza in. Mm-hmm. Oh, we can put a JaVale in for these big moments. Oh, we're playing against the Rockets. Okay, JaVale and Zaza, you guys go to the bench. We are going to play these young guys in specialized roles against the Rockets.
Right.
I think the Warriors were at a better place last year when they could do that.
I called them the Keystone Centers, and that wasn't a comment on sort of Keystone cops. They didn't know what they were doing out there. It's more like the Keystone is the thing that holds together the arch, and an arch, you know, five pieces of the arch, you put the center in there and it kind of dictates what it is that lineup's going to be. When you had Zaza in there, you knew that you were going to have an enforcer in there, and they'd play him a lot against Steven Adams, and he wouldn't do anything except make sure that Steven Adams had to work really hard for whatever it is Steven Adams was going to get on the box score that night. I'll say this, I mean, David West is not the biggest dude in the world, but that dude, Lord knows that no one wants to run into that brick wall of a human being, even in his older age. And these Warriors lack a little bit of enforcer. And Draymond certainly, he can do it. Lord knows he can do it. But you don't want him having to do that. The NBA, for all, again, all we say about how small it's getting, it's still an extremely physical league. And it's only going to get more physical in the playoffs, even as it gets smaller, because you just have these hyper athletes that are able to do it. We mentioned it earlier. I mean, Robin Lopez is the name that comes to mind, but there's got to, I mean, Bob Myers has got to be on the phone looking for somebody to slide in, particularly with Patrick McCaw's roster spot no longer really being in flux. I'm 99.9% certain that they're going to let him go to the Cleveland Cavaliers after they extended an offer sheet here. So that leaves some clarity there and maybe allows Bob Myers to move forward. You can't wait for Boogie, because, again, you don't know what Boogie's even going to be. As you said, he wasn't a good, you know, especially on the defensive end. Boogie's more of an offensive option now, especially with that Achilles. It's not dangerous times, because Lord knows the Warriors are doing just fine. It's all expectations versus reality, and they're not living up to their exceedingly high expectations put on them by us in the media and fans before the season. But man, I mean, there is a deficiency on this roster, and we don't know if it's going to be filled in house. Tying into that, you know, last year they had a lot of centers, and yes, they were maligned for having a lot of centers because they kept a lot of dudes on the bench where you thought maybe this could help their rotation. But it's not as if the rotations have been very big as of recent. 7-8-man rotations. Quinn Cook got 11 minutes last night and got all the Quinn Cook stands out because he had a fairly nice game with 6 points. I had to somehow remind people that, hey, Quinn Cook can't defend anybody, and it's kind of hard to have a dude out there who is pinpointed by defenses every time he's on the court when you do a super switching defense. But alas, Quinn Cook provided some solid minutes, 2 3-pointers. And now people are saying, hey, let's get Quinn Cook back into this rotation. Jordan Bell, not as good in his 6 minutes, -7 on the night. But this rotation is weird, and it's really leaning into sort of the comment that I've been pushing all season, and this isn't a confirmation bias thing, but it's a very top heavy roster. And now that Alphonso McKinney has sort of come back to earth to a certain degree,
I'm sorry, bro.
No, it's all good. It was a good run. Like, he's come back to earth, and now you're just kind of down one more rotation guy. It's really shining a light on how top heavy this roster is, how much Sean Livingston has sort of fallen off from where he was, and it's to be expected. He's getting up there. How Jordan Bell is sort of a liability. He's not sort of a liability on defense. He is a liability on defense, and how his offensive game lacks refinement and understanding. And this Jacob Evans pick is just glaring to me. I cannot get over how Bob Myers missed on it. Maybe not in the long term, but let's not forget the reason that Jacob Evans was drafted, and this is from Bob Myers' mouth, was that he could be a rotation wing for the Golden State Warriors this season. They drafted the guy with the most experience. They drafted the guy they thought was most NBA ready. And he is not NBA ready, or at least the coaching staff of the Golden State Warriors, who I'd like to give the benefit of the doubt to on things like this, don't think that he can give them even 5 minutes a game. It's pretty rough goings, and it only exacerbates some of the problems that you see where it's like, this is why Klay might be forcing up shots sometimes. He knows that there's no one coming in to back him up beyond these top units. The main guy's got to score, and that hasn't been the case yet during this Warriors dynasty, and I'm interested in the psychology of how that goes. But did you feel anything better because Kerr had to go to a little bit deeper of a rotation on Saturday because it was of the circumstances and the back-to-back games and all that stuff?
Well, I don't know, man. I think that, you know, the youth movement hasn't really been, let's be quite frank, it hasn't been what they thought it was going to be.
Absolutely.
And a lot of that, I think, has to do with, I mean, history has shown us it's hard to both develop guys and keep a championship aspirations. A lot of these guys, well, like if a Jordan Bell was on, if he did, say he did get drafted by the Bulls,
right? He didn't get traded for $3.5 million immediately after. Yeah,
if he did get traded, I mean, didn't get traded and stayed with the Bulls, I mean, he could make all these mistakes and we wouldn't give a damn. We wouldn't care.
Right.
He could, and same
he'd
with
probably be getting minutes. He wouldn't be getting the short leash because he's a liability to whatever it is the Bulls are trying to do.
Exactly. Same with the Jacob Evans. If he gets drafted by the Suns, it wouldn't matter. We wouldn't care. But I think that that's the conundrum that you face when you go a youth movement, when you have championship aspirations. That's a lot of times why when you see a Miami Heat back in the day, you see them get a Mike Miller, Eddie House. You get veteran dudes who can step up in those moments. So it's hard right now when you've got young guys that you want to see flourish in the future, and you have championship or aspirations, and it's hard to develop. We saw that last year with Patrick McCaw,
Absolutely.
Where on a normal team, he's trying to develop in his, in his second year, and he can't necessarily do that because there's so much pressure on him to do well.
I don't know if it's the pressure. It's that you don't get consistent run. You don't get to get into a rhythm ever because you're not a top choice on the team. And that's where I find it interesting because Kerr said, I mean, going into this year, particularly with the centers, but it translates out to the entire team that, like, we're really wanting, the reason that they picked up Damian Jones's option is they want to develop this dude. They want to make sure that he's the center of the future. And that wasn't working out before, poor guy got injured for the rest of the year. Like, it wasn't working. And yes, they continued to sort of force feed it, but now he's losing confidence, and it's 1,000% tough. I'm glad that you brought up the Miami Heat there. Extremely astute in the sense that, why did the Heat dynasty end? Well, okay, LeBron leaves. That's a big factor. I feel like that's a number one. Chris Bosh's blood clots and stuff. That's probably two. But like, why did LeBron leave? If we're really doing it, I don't think it was to just go back home. It was because he looked at this roster and he goes, "We don't have enough." Their big issue was depth down the stretch. They couldn't get it done. That fourth year when they lose to the Spurs. They didn't have enough bodies. They couldn't develop enough dudes. Shabazz Napier was not the guy. Like, and they're doing, running Mario Chalmers out there, and he's killing them time and time again. Warriors don't have that exact problem because, they have, five All-Stars on their current roster, including, and an NBA Finals MVP. And, Sean Livingston, for as much as I say he's fallen off, is still a solid player. Jonas Jerebko is a solid player. But the bottom end of
it. They have two NBA Finals MVPs on their roster. Show some respect to Andre.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying they have five All-Stars, an NBA Finals MVP, Sean Livingston. Like, they're fine. Yeah. These are champagne problems, don't get me wrong. But the bottom end of this roster really hasn't gotten any better. I mean, McKinney gave you the spurt. The book is out on the dude now. I think he's missed his last eight threes, which for him is a large sample. Evans isn't getting run, and that's by choice. Quinn Cook. It's just not, he's a tread water player. He's going to give up as much as he gets, and he has to be really good on the offensive end in order to justify putting him out there on defense. I mean, the really good game that he had last night, he's minus two. And Bell, I mean, I guess it's to be expected, but he just hasn't, he hasn't taken the leap yet in terms of being smart out there. He is trying to get by on his athletic ability, which is prodigious, but he needs to be a smarter player on the court, and he certainly has the capability to do it mentally. No one's saying that he's not a smart kid and a sharp kid, but it just hasn't clicked for him yet, and the Warriors can't just wait around and hope that that happens. So I don't know, man. Like, this is the McCaw thing, as weird as it was, now that there's some resolution there, they have a roster spot open. I don't know what you can really do with Evans or McKinney. I mean, McKinney's contract isn't even guaranteed for another couple of weeks. You could, in theory, make something happen there if you really wanted to bolster this bench. But the Boogie situation, I think, probably clears up some of this, at least offensively, because that has been their big issue, right? Like, they're just not getting points from their bench dudes, and they're having to do some really funky rotations with the starters to kind of keep them on the court. And I listening to the comments last night, I mean, neither of us were in Portland, but like watching, you know, Mark Medina's videos and the other beat writers' videos, like from the scrums, like I think Steph's kind of pissed at these rotations. That was the kind of vibe I got. Like, he understands and he'll always be a good soldier, but he's like, I don't like this. I like playing the full first quarter, you know, well, the way that we did it for years.
I saw that. Let me get that quote. It was pretty telling. He was saying, let me see. He says, I'm going to get a little heated at times when I come out and coach is going to ignore me and take me out when he feels necessary. I'm going to be on the bench mad. Hopefully I get momentum while I'm on the floor. That's how it goes. At the end of the day, I know how to play basketball and keep comfortable with what we need to do as a team. That was pretty telling.
Steph Curry saying, I know how to play basketball, as if that was in question, which the fact that he feels so inclined to be like, by the way, I know how to play basketball. You know, the guy who's just changed the entire NBA and is arguably, I think that time will tell that he is one of the most influential players of all time, and in a very small class of influential players of all time. The fact that he's going out there and going, I know how to play basketball, is really interesting. And listen, like, Steph played the entire first quarter, and this is such a weird in-the-weeds thing, but it is telling as to where the Warriors are with their depth. Played the entire first quarter for the last 4 years. I wasn't covering the team when Jackson was around, and Lord knows Mark Jackson's rotations are not anything to be hallowed from what I recall. But, like, there was a certain rotation that was set, and then Kevin Durant comes in, and the rotation remains. Like, and now they're trying to figure out funky ways because Clay couldn't carry the burden of the second unit without David West out there. Is what it is. Wasn't happening. We're more of a third of the way through the season. That didn't work. And Durant, there was something that Steve didn't like about that look with Durant, because maybe it plays into Kevin's tendencies to play hero ball a little bit too much, and he didn't like how it sort of remeshed when the starting lineup got back together at the beginning of the third quarter. I don't know what that's about, but now Steph is sort of the man in the middle, and he's got to sacrifice again. And yes, it's a meaningless sacrifice in many senses, because he's still getting his minutes. It's not as if he's not getting shots. It's not as if he's playing with scrubs. But he's actually playing a little bit more, and he's not playing in the sort of rhythms and rotations that he usually expects. That's a weird situation for him, and the only reason that this has to happen is because the Warriors don't have enough depth.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also, you know, players are creatures of habit. He's been playing in this situation for, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years. And it is definitely frustrating when that changes. But when's the last time you heard Steph say this about a coach? Yeah. I'm going to get a little heated at times when I come out and coach is going to ignore me and take me out when he feels it's necessary.
Yeah.
When have you heard something like that before? I'm not trying to make this thing.
We don't want to blow it up here. Like, it does remind me a little bit of when Steph comes back from injury, of which we have many instances where we can remember the game or two that he comes back from injury. And the Warriors kind of have him on a quasi-minutes restriction, right? And he'll start getting hot because he'll start getting into the rhythm of things. But then Steve will see him, you know, totally gassed. But he's in the rhythm and he's gassed. And then Steve pulls him and he'll kind of be heated. And always in those press conferences, he's like, yeah, I didn't want to come out, but I know I had to, and this and that. Steph will play for 48 minutes a game. He is one of those guys who needs to be saved from himself. Say what you will about, like, Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, but if they need a blow, they'll get out. Like, they're pragmatic about it, and there's no... It's not because they're any less tough or anything like that. They just, that's how it goes. Steph, though, Steph's one of those guys that he's never going to be happy about getting pulled, which is why the first quarter thing probably was so beneficial, because there's a very clear line of when Steph Curry comes out of the game. It's when the buzzer sounds, and then he sort of starts it off. It's a nice rhythm. It's a good luxury if you can have it, I imagine, just knowing that you have – you knowing when you're going to come out of the game at the start, when you're trying to get in, you're trying to catch the pace of the game, you're trying to catch the rhythm of the game, and you're not constantly looking over your shoulder wondering when Kerr's going to pull you. Yeah, I bet that's pretty nice. You know exactly. You got 12 minutes to figure your stuff out, even if you start a little bit slow. And you know you're going to get a full 12 minutes if you start hot, and you can keep this thing going forever. That's a nice luxury. But I can't think of another player in the NBA who has it, and so I would be kind of peeved, too, if it was taken away. It's not Steph's fault. It's a little bit Clay's fault, but is what it is. And listen, Kerr's got to do something here, because if he just keeps kind of rolling out same old, same old, it's not going to work. Do you have any concern with the fact that, you know, the Warriors made their entire season about developing young guys, and yet they haven't developed a young guy? Like, is that, does that
like
shake
one young guy?
Like, who have they developed? I mean, Alphonso McKinney shows up in training camp, is doing exactly what he did at the beginning of the season, and it's like, wow, it's not as if they had nurtured him along for years and turned Alphonso McKinney into this thing. He was found money. The fact that they haven't gotten Jordan Bell any better, the fact that Quinn Cook hasn't improved, though I'm not really sure he could improve, because he's a dogged defender, he's a smart defender, it's his physical limitations that really cap him off in that. Or, you know, Jacob Evans can't even get in there. Like, you're dealing with, you know, veterans, I guess Looney, I don't know. Like, is there concern that this entire season was about we're going to take the regular season and develop? No matter what happens, we're going to do that, because that's the hard part, as you went through perfectly. That's the hard part, developing while maintaining extreme success. We're going to develop, and yet I'm seeing no development, and I'm seeing more responsibility both on the court and sort of mentally in terms of leadership and stuff, having to fall on the main four guys who are there currently. And responsibility now falling on Boogie, who's not even in there yet, and we have no idea what he's going to look like. That's a little bit concerning for me.
Yeah, I think the only person that has been developed in the Warriors' eyes has been Kevon. And yeah, that was, you know, that was him losing weight, and that was mostly him in the offseason.
Mostly Kevon,
when he was in
LA.
Other than that, I haven't really seen much development out of their guys. I mean, just being quite honest, and it is, but like, I think that also goes to the sense of, like, usually when you develop a player, you need patience, and you need them to screw up in a game a few times. And they just, these young guys just don't have the luxury of doing that. They can't screw up for a few possessions like they could on a bad team, or even a, even a Sacramento Kings team or something like that.
Yeah,
They're not going to get the reps. That's why it's so hard to develop. They can have the best coaches out there, which, you know, the Warriors do. Which they might. But it's still rough to do that when these guys can't make mistakes in games, when they're expected to just be perfect every time out on the floor. It's hard to do that. It's really hard to do that. And I think that the Warriors are seeing that right now.
And beyond that, they're also being catered for more or less specialty roles, as we got into earlier with the centers. Like, you have to do just this, which you would think is, you know, oh, that's easy. You just have to do your job, right? But sometimes those roles don't necessarily jive with what guys have been doing in the past and what it is that they think they're good at. And, you know, now you're basically giving them the immersion course. It's tricky. Again, these are all champagne problems. I mean, this is really just expectations versus reality. As we speak, as I mentioned earlier, Warriors are a half game back. It's not as if they still don't have prohibitive odds to win the NBA championship and win the Western Conference. But confidence is rattled. And it's probably rightly rattled. Probably shouldn't have been that high in the first place, but it's nevertheless rattled. And we're in a weird wait and see period of time, but plenty to talk about with this team. We'll see what Klay Thompson can do here in the next couple of games. That might be the number one storyline. I'll say this: there's plenty of reason confidence to be rattled if the Warriors can't beat the Phoenix Suns on New Year's Eve. That would be quite bad. I think that would be a reason to panic.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we'll see what happens. I will say this, though. DeAndre Ayton, balling.
Dude, it's about time. Now, listen, Listen, he is a garbage defender right now. Now, he will not always be. He has the skills. He has the feet. He certainly has the physical talent. But he does not. He is a turnstile out there right now. But he's probably a net zero player because he is going straight Carl Anthony Towns on us all. Kevon Looney, we've been talking about how the Warriors centers have been getting beat up by real centers. This team certainly isn't anywhere near the playoff race. They got disqualified in the first like 3 weeks when Devin Booker was out. But they're playing decent ball, probably good ball. By their standards, great ball. And Ayton is on fire right now, and he is likely to have a field day on New Year's Eve. So the Warriors do, they cannot overlook the Phoenix Suns as much as we want to joke about Steve Kerr handing over the clipboard and stuff like that. Like, that's a team that absolutely can beat them if the Warriors don't come right. And if we've learned one thing this season, it's that the Warriors don't come right all that often. And so we'll have to see. Interesting week coming up. Yeah, Suns on New Year's Eve. They play the Rockets, a game that I don't know what that means anymore, but they play Thursday night, and then a game in Sacramento, which we saw earlier this season. They're fun as hell. The Kings are eminently excitable, and they'll play Saturday night in Sacramento, so another home game for the Warriors. But pretty interesting week coming up. And listen, man, 3-0 wouldn't shock me. 0-3 wouldn't shock me, even with those teams lined up. So we'll have to see how it all goes.
Right, man. This was pretty fun as always, man.
I mean, it was fun. I hope it was informative. I think like that's the thing. Like we could talk basketball all day, but we record it to be informative, right? I think. I don't know. Depends. I haven't looked at our thesis, but Logan, always a pleasure. Always fun.
Yes.
Shout out where the people can get you on Twitter.
Logan M. Murdoch. I am talking about Warriors. I am talking about Bird Box. I am talking about everything okay. that is in my life.
Okay. Did you watch Bird Box?
I watched Bird Box last night.
What was your overall thought?
It was
Be honest with me.
Honestly, it didn't seem like, as far as a storyline, it didn't seem like something that I would do. I think that – did you watch Bird Box yet?
Oh, yeah. I've watched it, and I have very strong opinions, shockingly.
Okay, I just feel like being alive, and I don't want to get morbid on this, but, like, I don't know if I would have, like, wanted to stay. It wasn't worth it for that long do all of that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, it was a cool movie. It wasn't like, Academy Award winning. It was a good movie. What do you think?
I think at the end, first off, it was impressively directed, and I thought the acting was pretty damn good without being exceptional. But these movies, I mean, I have the same problem with Quiet Place. Like, the plot holes in these things are incredible. Like, why wouldn't people be trying to figure out, like, the proper translucency of the blindfolds? Like, what level can you get to? Because people seem pretty willing to just kill themselves early in the movie on experimental bases. So, I don't know. Like, the thing I found most interesting about Bird Box is the fact that it's direct to Netflix, it's a big budget movie, and how everyone has seen this movie now because it's just in everybody's living room, and how big of a change that is from 15 years ago when, or even like Black Panther, where it would take weeks for everybody to get into the theater and see it. Now, everybody's seen this one movie, which isn't all that good, but isn't like, oh, I hated my, 2 hours watching it, even though I wanted to turn it off like 3 times in the first hour. Everybody's seen it within the first week. It's this cultural touchstone thing. It was fascinating. By the way, don't see Vice. It was legitimately one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Right. I don't know. There was a lot of unanswered questions. Like, where did Machine Gun Kelly go, when they drove off? You know what I'm saying? Like, what happened to that?
And it doesn't matter, man. It doesn't matter, man. They found love. They found love in the laundry room, and you got to run with it.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool. It wasn't like, and I think that's
they probably went to the grocery store, right?
Yeah, and also when they went to the grocery store, why did Lil Rel gotta die, and why was homie just crazy like the way he? I don't know. I have a lot of questions.
That was explained later in the movie. It was the same thing when Michael Sheen comes in or whatever that guy's name is, and he's telling everybody to look at it. Like, if you have a mental instability before it all goes down, then you're somehow still alive.
Yeah.
Which is I thought was clever, because like clearly they wrote the movie without that, and then at the end of it they're like, oh damn, we're gonna actually need like an antagonist in this movie, So, like, yeah. I guess some people are still conscious. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know I was sad when Bradford Moonlight had to kill himself at the end. I wanted them to be a happy family.
Man, that's a crazy spoiler alert right there.
Hey, man, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I guess it's been a week. We've literally done it. If you ain't on it, you're never getting there.
Yeah. Well, Logan, that's what I've been watching. If you guys want to go on my Twitter, that's what you're going to see. just a whole bunch of hot takes.
Hot basketball takes and bird box inquiries.
Yep.
All right, Logue. We'll talk soon, buddy.
All right. Peace.